For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website. Good morning, everyone. This is a very special morning because it is the first day of fall. So in the Northern Hemisphere, that is. So last night at 8:54 p.m., our planet experienced the September equinox, which means that the plane of the equator passed through the center of the sun. Or another way to put it is the center of the sun was directly above the equator. And I find this hard to picture, but the part that we can all understand easily is that 2 days a year, once in the spring and once in the fall, day and night are the same length all over the globe. But only for a day, because then beginning from today, from the equinox, nights will gradually get longer and longer, and days will get shorter and shorter until December 21st at 4:23 p.m., when we have the winter solstice. So when these nights start getting longer, I start feeling a pull inward. I have a birthday this month also. Thursday is my birthday. And so the combination of these two, I get the impulse to look inward, to reflect, to look back, also to look forward, maybe set an intention. Some of you know I practice Tai Chi, which has its origins in Taoism. And the way Taoists see it is that fall is the time of moving from the dominant yang energy of summer, so that would be daytime, the sun, brightness, heat, movement, to the dominant yin energy of winter, which would be nighttime, the moon, shade, coolness, rest. And I think we can, if we're paying attention, we can actually start to feel the shift in our bodies. For me, I'm a pretty strong introvert, so I feel familiar and comfortable in the quiet, dark winter months. So in ancient spiritual practices, the September equinox in the Northern Hemisphere, they would celebrate this change of seasons and with feasting and so forth. But when you think about it, winter was a pretty dangerous time for our species. It was challenging to our actual survival. So harvest and feasting is also the time for us to mentally and physically prepare for hardship and less comfort, because a lot of things die in winter. And our culture doesn't acknowledge death most of the time, and provides lots of ways to have us separate from thinking about it. Sort of the way Shakyamuni Buddha's father sort of wanted him not to know about death and illness. In fall, it's easier to see death all around us. So it's, and that it's part of what's natural, part of what's right. So, you know, we see the trees drop their leaves and flowers fading and birds flying south and squirrels collecting acorns. And so this kind of awareness, I think it helps us understand our connection to everything else, and also start to experience this reality of the cycle of life and death. So So this seemed like the perfect time for to share some of my thoughts on some of the reading I've been doing about aging and death over the last few years. I already did a talk on this 3 years ago. I looked at it to see if I had changed much since then. And at that time, what I shared was I was reading autobiographies of people that I thought led interesting, admirable, inspiring lives, original people. And so I wrote on Oliver Sacks. I talked about Oliver Sacks, Bernd Heinrich, who's an ecologist, and Philip Glass. And it's funny, when I looked at it, I thought, oh, three men, three white men. I wish I had included Patti Smith or Aretha Franklin. but my idea was that reading about how people had led really good lives what helps us to think about the prospect of dying in a sort of a positive way. Well, that was good, and now I'm done. So I don't know how many people on their deathbed would sort of look back and think, oh, I led a good life. And of course, you get to say what a good life is. It's sort of like by your own standards what it is. So anyway, this time I want to talk about four books. They're much more directly written about aging and all this stuff. So one is Aging as a Spiritual Practice by Lewis Richmond. Second one is The Five Invitations by Franco Stiseski. The third is more a booklet than a book. It's a new publication from the San Francisco Zen Center called When Blossoms Fall. And then the last one is called Older and Wiser, Classical Buddhist Teachings on Aging, Sickness, and Death. And I'm going to obviously have to be pretty brief about each one of them, but they all have things to recommend them. So Lou Richmond, I'm sure you probably know him. Yeah, anyway, as a young man, he was a student of Suzuki Roshi, and the book has a lot of quotes from Suzuki Roshi. In fact, I think Suzuki Roshi should probably share in the royalties of this book. But he recalls Suzuki Roshi answering a student who asked him, so why are we meditating? He said, well, so we can enjoy our old age. And I thought that was a really nice quote. But his premise is that the experience of aging can, and I think he would say should, be a doorway to spiritual practice. Everyone is getting older, and this, and that, thinking about this profound changes, can be a doorway to spiritual practice. So that's what this book is for. That's what I think what he wants to accomplish with this book. So he over and over again urges us to pay attention to our aging. And he's a Zen priest. And he doesn't hide that in the book. But this is a book I think that would be very accessible to non-practitioners. It's a pretty easy read, and he tells lots of stories. He tells stories about himself, and he interviews a lot of people about their experiences and tells those stories. When I was a new Zen practitioner, I just found it impossible to force myself to read sutras and koans. I just couldn't do it. But I just devoured people's stories about coming to the practice, memoirs and other stories, and especially when they had difficulties and overcame those difficulties. So this sort of operates like that. He also has what he calls contemplative reflection. So I'll tell you about a couple of those just to give you a flavor of it. So one of them he calls the gratitude walk. So these reflections are things that you can do if you're grappling with these ideas. So one he calls the gratitude walk. And so the idea is to regularly take some time, go outside, bring a notebook and pen, and just walk wherever you choose, your neighborhood or a park or whatever, and just write down all the things you feel grateful for and why. So, you know, a tree, a dog, the sunshine, etc. And then go back inside and, you know, look at, sort of reflect on what you've written. And his idea is that, he says gratitude, you know, physical exercise is good for your body and gratitude is good for your spirit and your heart. So the idea is that it's a gratitude exercise. So, and that because then we're focusing on what we have rather than focusing on what we lost or what we fear we're going to lose. So, and so then but there are lots of different kinds of these reflections. Here's a different one that he said he got from another priest who on his altar had put a bowl with pebbles, and he had counted out those pebbles, one pebble for every week that he would live if he lived to age 80. So I don't know how old he was when he did, but he counted them all out from his driveway and had that on his altar. And then every Monday after his meditation, he would take one pebble and put it back in his driveway. And obviously it would remind him that the bowl is getting emptier and emptier. Anyway, Richmond said that when he tried the same practice, he found it upsetting that there were so few pebbles in the bowl. But then sometimes he would like run his fingers through the pebbles and it felt like a lot. So anyway, I would say nothing in this book is particularly original or brilliant. And sometimes had a little flavor of New Age, but it's a nice summary of what comes up. He defines four key stages of aging. One he calls lightning strikes, the moment we wake up to the fact of our aging, coming to terms, comparing ourselves now to how we once were, adaptation, letting go of who we were and embracing who we are, and appreciation, acknowledging that this is my life, I have no other. So he doesn't say that's a sequential roadmap, but these are all things that we are thinking about and working with as we're going through our understanding. So the second book I wanted to mention is called The Five Invitations. It's like Buddhists, there's always fours and fives and eights. Anyway, this one's Five Invitations. The subtitle is Discovering What Death Can Teach Us About Living Fully. And the author is Frank Ostoseski. I think he's arguably the world's most influential people on in the realm of hospice care. He's the co-founder of the Zen Hospice Project, which was founded in the 80s originally to serve dying AIDS patients who had nowhere to go at that time. And he's the founder of the Metta Institute, which trains healthcare practitioners and caregivers in working with dying people. I like what it says on the website of the Institute. The Institute is dedicated to restoring death to its honored and sacred place. We believe the wisdom traditions can help us pull toward help us resist the pull toward technological, institutional, and dehumanized dying. And they talk about revisioning of dying in America. So Ostoseski has definitely walked the walk. He says in his introduction that he sat on the precipice of death with a few thousand people, and it's not hyperbole. He has literally sat on the precipice of death with thousands of people. And he also experienced a life-threatening heart attack himself, which he writes about in this book very beautifully, very movingly, both about his response to it, his family's response to it, and how it influenced his thinking about death from the point of view of the dying person. He says about that experience, "I was still Frank, but my personality was no longer the dominant force it had once been." So I think he's just splendid. It's very fine writing. And it's also filled with stories. But So I read Richmond's book in a few hours. This one I've been reading for a year, and I'm still not quite through it. There are a lot of things to chew on it, and some of the stories are not happy. So he suggests that we explore death through what he's calling the five invitations, which I'll just go through. I'm not going to do them justice, but they're interesting and beautiful. So the first invitation is don't wait. So stop waiting for things to get better. Our work is really, so this is not waiting, he says, is the pathway to fulfillment and an antidote to regret. So basically, don't wait. The second invitation is welcome everything, push away nothing. And so in welcoming everything, we don't have to like it. He says, it's not our job to approve or disapprove of what's arising, but it is our job to be there for it, to suspend sort of our judgment and to be open to what is happening, because, you know, who are we to say we really understand it? He says we need to cultivate receptivity, fearless receptivity. The third invitation is bring your whole self to the experience. And this one is more complicated, but he's talking about embracing parts of ourself that we maybe don't like fear, anger, shameful experiences, painful experiences. And he's talking not about perfection, but wholeness. I've been thinking about this one a lot. It's a koan for me to think about wholeness in my life. Connecting with everything else is one kind of wholeness, but connecting to all parts of oneself is another kind of wholeness. The fourth invitation is find a place of rest in the middle of things. So usually you think about rest as, you know, first you work and then you rest. But I think here we can think about our zazen. I think we can think about our breathing as a place of rest. And it's something we can learn to make available to ourselves in our busyness, in our working, in our rushing around, and being in the present moment and calming our mind and our body. And then the last invitation is cultivate don't know mind. So I think don't know mind is like beginner's mind. It's really allow for more possibilities than by being, again, being open to them, not be limited to this narrow view of you think you know about what it is. Cultivate don't know mind, cultivate that openness. So you probably noticed I give this book my highest recommendation. I mean, and it's completely imbued with Buddhist teachings from beginning to end, but I also think it would be very, very accessible to non-practitioners. And we do have a copy in the library. I think it's a wonderful book. So then the third booklet, I guess, is from the San Francisco Zen Center. It's called When Blossoms Fall. And we have this electronically, but I think we're also going to have hard copies in the libraries. I printed out my electronic one. You can see it's really pretty short, just a few, 28 pages or so. So the introduction says it's designed to help us face our own deaths and the deaths of our loved ones with compassion and awareness, also intended to help us make some important decisions with the support of Buddhist teachings and practices. This is completely geared towards Zen practitioners, and it's a very good overview. There is a lot of stuff summarized in a very short booklet. So there aren't any stories in here, and it's not a good read, but it is an excellent reference. So it starts with an excerpt from the Parinirvana Sutra. I always say that wrong. The Buddha's Last Word, and it has some short writings from Dogen and Suzuki Roshi and others. And then, you know, it discusses issues related to caregiving and care of the body after death and Buddhist services and memorials. There's even a whole bunch of chants that would be appropriate for ceremonies of memorial services. And two pages of really practical information, you know, secure account passwords in a format accessible by another. It's a little mundane, but very important. So, and it ends with three pages of references and resources. So I recommend this as a resource. I think it's good to just have, and everybody will have different parts of it that they might benefit from, but that's about all I'm going to say about that. And then the last book I wanted to mention is Older and Wiser, Classical Buddhist Teachings on Aging, Sickness, and Death. There are three authors. Well, Buddha is the main author, Shakyamuni. But Mu Song, a Korean Zen teacher, Gloria Taraniya Ambrosia, a lay monk who teaches within the Thai forest tradition, disciples of Ajahn Chah, and Andrew Olensky, who's a Theravadan scholar. So this is a textbook, and it's interesting to have a textbook, a Buddhist textbook, on aging, sickness, and death. And it's organized in chapters. So the first chapter is A Time for Retiring, the second chapter, Equanimity, then Aging, then Illness. You see where we're going here. Death and Dying, Mourning, Practice. And then each chapter begins with relevant sutra excerpt, and then there are responses from each of these three teachers from their own perspective, and there are discussion questions. So I'm in a discussion group about these issues, and this is a book that we use sometimes for our discussion, and our people in our group are from different Buddhist traditions, so it's helpful to have this. Again, it's not, I don't consider it a book to read from beginning to end. Someone might do that. But it is a wealth of very rich material. So none of these books really tells you what to do. You know, it's like, oh, now I'm getting older. You're getting older whether you're 14 years old or whether you're, I'll be 71 on Thursday, so or older than that. So, but it is all helpful. I trust Suzuki Roshi's advice that our meditation practice is preparation for our older years, but I have very much benefited from looking around to hear and think about what other people are offering. So I would summarize the wisdom I've gleaned as don't waste time, pay attention, be grateful, and appreciate this amazing opportunity of life. And so that's my talk. Happy equinox to everyone.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Very helpful. Comments, questions, responses?
Repeat those last three again.
I should know them without looking at my notes. Pay attention. Be grateful. Who knows the other
one? Don't waste time.
Don't waste time. It's right on the Han. Yeah, don't waste time. Yesterday, I was coming home from DuPage County, and I made a bad turn and ended up in traffic on I-55, and I got into that headspace that we get into of, I hate traffic, I hate everything, you know. And I thought, oh, you're wasting time. This is a perfectly good time. Just use it. Here you are. You're in this quiet car. You can do something besides bitch. So that is interesting. So we have to figure out ways not to waste time. The world tries to make us waste time a lot to resist the world on that one. Yeah, it's a great question. I think about that a lot, and I have really changed my thinking about wasting time. I mean, an example is what I just said about being in the car in traffic, thinking, well, you know, I think I was wasting time when I was complaining, but then as soon as I stopped complaining, it was perfectly pleasant to be in my car, being alive and thinking about, you know, whatever I was thinking about. So in that case, I think the wasting time was getting tangled up in that. It was just useless to complain. It wasn't helpful in any way to me or the situation. Other ways of wasting time? I'd be interested in everybody weighing in on this one. That exercise of taking the pebbles out 1 week at a time is and watching the pebbles go down. I think part of the idea of that was to focus yourself on, well, there's only so many pebbles. We don't know how many pebbles, but there's only so, it's a finite number. So, how do you think about wasting time? Yeah.
Because if I go, oh, this is good, like, I'm good if I'm not complaining.
Uh-huh.
Then I get rid of complaining. So I think about, like, maybe there is no wasting of time. It's an idea I have.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. More time. Mm-hmm. You know, or, oh, I want to be really cool at that. So, like, I'm just scared. You know, all those pebbles have been counted out, and I'm just like, you know, get it. And, you know, and then Dylan Thomas says something like, don't go gently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think about, you know, that's a profound question, what that says on don't waste time. So, I think it's just a question. What does it mean to accept everything without friction? Is that what I'm trying to get, some more friction? So there's like, you know, or get rid of friction. So I think, how do we just surf time?
So one thing that Franco Stasecki says so compellingly is he does not like people talking about a good death. You know, our goal is to have a good death. Our goal is to, if you want to call it a goal, I mean, what it is it's a death. Be there with it. Don't have a picture on your wall of what you want your death to be and then strive to get to that. It really is being there with it and being, as he said, being open to it, whether it's good or bad. A lot of the stories that he tells are hard to hear. People suffer. I'm not talking about physical suffering, although there is that often, but people suffer anguish about everything from regrets to uh, unwillingness to accept what's happening. I mean, people go really hard places during their death, during their period of dying.
Mm-hmm. What's that? Remember when? How do you escape hot and cold?
How do you escape hot and cold? And, you know, be cold until the cold kills you, be hot until the heat kills you. So there's something about, you know, and Suzuki kind of says, do what we do, burn ourselves completely.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's maybe a little bit about not wasting time. It's mm-hmm. not getting rid of complaint, but complain until the complaint kills you.
Mm-hmm. Is thank you for that question. It's a good one. It's helpful. Other people want to say Nicholas. Yeah, good to see you. Last time I saw you was Tassajara.
Yeah.
He's so clear. I've never heard anyone talk this so clear. This guy talks about horizontal time and vertical time. And horizontal time, the way he describes it, is, you know, sort of what we think of. You know, you go from 1 o'clock to 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock, Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday, and so forth. And then vertical time is what you were talking about, to just be in that whatever it is that feels, or that is, I guess, timeless. It's something that's hard to talk about. I don't know if that's helpful, horizontal and vertical. I think I'm going to donate that one to the library.
I just wanted to thank you for a wonderful and very thought-provoking talk. I know someone who really tries to optimize her use of time and resources and really is very focused on this and really suffers as a result. It can really become a preoccupation. So I think, as with many things in Zen, we have to just sort of hold it loosely, mm-hmm. this idea of wasting time. Mm-hmm. And there are no prescriptions in life for that, similar to like having a good death. You know, maybe we, I think there are times when maybe it's good to check in with ourselves about, you know, what am I doing with my life? Where am mm-hmm. I going with my life? And starting to recognize that we're aging is a good one, you know? But the idea that we're going to get it right is going to cause us a lot of suffering.
I completely agree with that. Do you think people are wasting time if they come home from work and get drunk every night? I mean, that's the kind of thing that comes to mind. I don't think anyone in this room does that. You know, I always try to think of extremes and then see what in that extreme is maybe a nugget of what I'm talking about when I say wasting time. But I don't, yes.
Well, I used to do that, actually.
Oh.
Yes, many years ago. I won't say how many. But I did ultimately feel like this is preventing, you know, I kind of just, you know, one day I was like, this is really preventing me from growing up and doing other things.
And living your life.
And so stopped. Hmm. So, is it a waste of time if we're doing something, you know, that we later decide was a waste of time? But,
yeah,
but it gives us the opportunity to thoroughly experience what a waste of time is.
Yeah.
I also, I had a terrible drug habit and got to tons of trouble. But, you know, and I guess if you, right after I stopped using it, you would have asked me, did I waste time? I probably would have said yes, but many years later, it's just that I get so much, there's so much richness there.
Mm-hmm. Make a to-do list.
Yeah, believe me, I make to-do lists all the time. I do, because I'm in graduate school and I'm working full time and I'm volunteering, and so I just got, oh, I got to get this done yesterday. I wasted time because I had something that I really wanted to get done. I didn't get done, but maybe it was a day for me just to reflect and just to be. And seeing here and today, we talk. Thank you so much.
Forgetting the one who is not busy is wasting time.
Is wasting time. So can you take care of all those things on your list, but also have a sense of that, I'm not being busy, just enjoying it, just doing it, the next thing? So I would say just appreciate everything.
To fill time.
Mm-hmm. Not to kill time as an escape from something.
Yeah. I mean, as you're saying that, I'm thinking one way you could think about wasting time is not paying attention, you know, just like basically not being there.
You're not enjoying whatever it is you're doing.
Mm-hmm. You're turning away.
Mm-hmm. It's yeah, not enjoying, say, your colonoscopy. I mean, it's like you have to enjoy everything. Anyway, are we done? Oh.
It's really a kind of a question, comment, I don't know what it is, but about our idea of aging and the experience of aging and how sometimes those are in conflict. I think when I look at these kinds of things and hear this talk, I think I have an idea in my head that starts when I'm 80, right? And I'm 67, but actually it started in my 50s, my early 50s. And I think I've been working through some of these things because it's just come upon me for almost 20 years. And sometimes I say, well, what are you doing? I mean, this is too early. You shouldn't be doing this now. You know, you should still be the upward thrust of, you know, middle age or whatever, but you're actually becoming an old man too soon or something. And it's so these ideas about when is it appropriate for these things to come up and life itself bringing these things up. What, do you have any thoughts about that?
I have so many thoughts. I mean, what does it mean to be an old man? That's an interesting idea. So I can't imagine there's any time that it's too soon to think about life is short and then you die, as we used to say. I mean, when I was in my 20s, that was sort of the thing that we would say to each other because we were cool. Life is short and then you die. Well, we were 25. What did we know? But turns out it was true. But what's the downside of thinking about it is my question to you. I mean, it's discovering what death can teach us about living fully. So what's the downside of learning about living fully would be my question to you. I mean, what are you postponing? I'm not sure I know how you're... I'm not sure I understand how you're thinking of that. Because living fully is being, what did you say, the upswing of middle age?
Yeah, or younger.
Or younger, yeah. Huh, that would be living fully, right?
Yeah, I guess it's being, the question comes from honestly being influenced by our youth-oriented culture. Mm-hmm. You know, you really shouldn't be doing what old people do, including this, so it's internal work, until you're really old, and then you're sort of surrendering to a bad thing. It's inevitable, so you might as well do it, you know?
Yeah, that's not the way I tell myself the story.
Right, but I'm realizing that I am influenced by that story.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you know, I'm a baby boomer, so we've got to be the world's most obnoxious generation. We are not going to be missed when we're finally gone. But, you know, I think we are dominating still some of the, you know, the zeitgeist or whatever you call it, you know, the conversation. I think that's why there's so many books about aging and dying. The baby boomers are buying them. I don't know if they're reading them, but they're buying them. The publishers are publishing them. When I retired, which is almost 5 years ago now, people kept saying, so now what are you going to do? It's like, everything, I don't want to sound like I have it all figured out. I definitely don't have it all figured out, but I do think it's important to look at it. Sorry. Tygen said I could talk about this as long as I didn't make it too depressing. So was it too depressing? Okay.